Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's hardly surprising that San Francisco would be one of the plaintiffs, along with Santa Clara down the bay, in this sanctuary city's case that has delivered a legal setback to the president. Marisa Lagos from our station KQED in San Francisco says in this report there's a long history and lots of civic pride over San Francisco's sanctuary city identity.
The debate began in the 1980s as civil wars raged in Central America and churches began providing refuge to fleeing immigrants.
They were seeking asylum because they would, had they stayed, they would have been killed.
Tom Amiano has been involved in San Francisco politics for 5 decades and represented the city in the state assembly. He says in the 80s, the Reagan administration refused to give Central American immigrants asylum, so cities began stepping up. First Berkeley, then dozens of others, including San Francisco, adopted policies prohibiting local officials from cooperating with immigration enforcement. San Francisco Sheriff Vicki Hennessy was working as a deputy in the jail back then.
Up until that time, ICE agents, or at the time immigration agents, were allowed to come into our jails and check all the booking cards and see who and question anybody they wanted to question.
The city's early sanctuary policies stopped those visits. But in 1989, they didn't stop immigration officials and San Francisco police from conducting a joint raid on a Latino dance club in San Francisco, Club Elegante. Dozens of people were handcuffed and detained for hours, including many U.S. citizens.
It was obvious that this was a big snafu that should have never happened.
Tom Amiano says that the raid
was what ignited that sleeping giant. And then there were demands made on the mayor. And, well, what are you going to do? What is the solution?
Civil rights attorney Robert Rubin helped write what would become San Francisco's sanctuary city law later that year and says even the city's conservative police chief was on board.
It wasn't even so much that he loved immigrants. It was, I think, more a sense of we need this type of policy because without it, we lose the trust and cooperation of the immigrant community that we're devoted to serve.
Rubin and others working in the city at the time say the federal government pushed back against these policies, even threatening to jail city leaders or strip federal funding. But as time passed, the city's law remained. So did outside pressure to change it. And in June 2008, the slaying of a San Francisco man and his 2 sons shook San Francisco to the core.
Cops say Edwin Ramos, shown here, is the killer, a suspected MS-13 gang member here illegally from El Salvador.
Danielle Bologna lost her husband, Tony, and 2 of her 4 kids in a heart-wrenching case of mistaken identity. Within weeks, conservative pundits came calling. Here's Danielle Bologna on the talk show of conservative commentator Laura Ingraham a month after the murders.
This should happen to any family. Any family should not have to go through what I'm going through right now. I can't even tell you guys. We were such a close family. We did everything. We did everything right. But yet these immigrants have more rights than we do.
Tom Amiano was a supervisor in San Francisco at the time.
Sanctuary city policy got blamed for that tragedy. And my understanding is it was a lot more complex than that.
The San Francisco Chronicle reported that the accused shooter, Edwin Ramos, was convicted of 2 violent felonies as a juvenile, but wasn't deported because of the city's policy not to hand over minors to Immigration and Customs Enforcement in any circumstance. The revelations fanned the flames of anger among critics, including Laura Ingraham, who vowed to help the Bolognas end sanctuary policies.
3 good people, innocent people, gunned down. Add them to the list of all the other people who have been gunned down,
absolutely,
knifed, raped, or brutalized by illegal aliens in this country.
San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom defended the sanctuary policy, but also rushed to change how the city handled juvenile offenders. Under the changes, any undocumented kid merely accused of a felony was given to immigration officials, even though adult suspects were still protected. Over the next year, the city turned over more than 100 juveniles to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. A year later, the Board of Supervisors amended city law to clarify that only juveniles convicted of a felony should be reported to ICE. But in those early months, says Tom Amiano, a key fact was lost in the flurry of outrage.
It was the feds who dropped the ball.
Bologna family friend Marnie McKee agrees and says ICE knew exactly who and where the Bologna shooter was because he was the subject of a federal gang investigation and he'd applied for legal status.
They were communicating with him because he was trying to get his status changed. They knew where he worked. They knew where he lived. They knew where he hung out. They knew where he committed criminal activities. They were following him around.
Supporters of sanctuary laws say it's not unusual for critics to attack those policies, even if there's blame to go around. And the Ramos case was just one turn in a debate that still rages over how this liberal city should handle people without legal U.S. status. Donald Trump turned that disagreement into a major component of his presidential campaign.
My opponent wants sanctuary cities. But where was the sanctuary for Kate Steinle?
Again in 2015, a horrific murder roiled San Francisco and made national headlines. 32-year-old Kate Steinle was shot and killed while walking along the San Francisco waterfront.
San Francisco police have 45-year-old Francisco Sanchez in custody. CRON4 sources say that Sanchez is on probation in Texas and in the country illegally. Those sources also say that Sanchez has been deported to Mexico several times.
The sanctuary law was again attacked, but again, there was blame to go around. Sanchez had recently been released from San Francisco jail after a court dismissed a 20-year-old marijuana charge. Then Sheriff Ross Mercurimi ignored orders to tell immigration officials about his release, citing the sanctuary law. But why he was in San Francisco in the first place remains unclear. Sanchez had just finished almost 4 years in a federal prison for crossing the border illegally, the fifth time he'd been caught sneaking into the U.S. He also had 7 felony convictions. Yet the federal government transferred him to San Francisco for a decades-old misdemeanor instead of deporting him again. And while the policies remain unpopular among conservatives outside San Francisco's borders, a recent poll found that 79% of San Franciscans approve of the sanctuary law. City leaders have taken note. Most of the 10 tweaks to the law made since 1989 have made it harder for local officials to cooperate with ICE. Now, state lawmakers are considering a bill that could make California a sanctuary state in the view of the Trump administration by limiting state and local police from cooperating with most deportation actions. Senate President Kevin DeLeon, a Los Angeles Democrat, says the bill will keep communities safe.
The last thing we need is for crime to increase in neighborhoods because police officers have left their beat, their duties to go and help set up a perimeter around a church or a shelter or an elementary school. Local police departments protect and serve. They don't enforce federal immigration law.
Sheriffs and others are fighting the bill. But DeLeon and supporters of sanctuary laws say it's important to note what sanctuary laws don't do. For example, they don't prevent local jails from sharing fingerprints with ICE. Every county in the nation does that. And says Robert Rubin, the author of San Francisco's original law,
people needed to understand that nothing in the City Refuge Ordinance could do anything to stop the federal government from enforcing its own immigration laws. It simply said, we're not going to help you. We're not going to be a part of it. We think that this is the wrong way to go.
It's not entirely clear what the fiscal consequences for California or San Francisco may be, though the city didn't wait to find out, suing the president days after his executive order was issued in January. San Francisco receives about $2 billion a year from the federal government. But a lawyer for the Trump administration said in court recently that the administration isn't going after all that money, just law enforcement grants. The judge in that case made clear he believes it would be illegal for the administration to go any further. Judge William Orrick also said he thinks the cities have a strong case that Trump's broader funding threat is unconstitutional. State Senator Kevin DeLeon agrees.
You just can't, with a signature, you know, with a pen, say, I'm going to punish San Francisco, Los Angeles, or any other city. The reality is this. It's illegal, and it's unconstitutional.
It will be up to the courts to decide who's right. For The Takeaway, I'm Marisa Lagos in San Francisco.